I'd like to, first of all, ask you to correctly pronounce your name for us.
Okay. First name is kind of strange. It's Kennard. Nobody pronounces it right. Nobody's ever heard of it. Please call me Ken. And last name is Rosso. But anything close to that suffices very well.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The way that we'll proceed is we will ask you to provide a brief opening statement. And then council members will have the opportunity to ask you questions and respond. There may be some follow-up questions. Sometimes there are, sometimes there aren't. And then about 5 or 7 minutes before the close of our interview time together, we'll ask you to provide a brief closing statement. And are there any questions that you have for us before we get started?
Not at this point.
Thank you. Well, welcome.
Thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to be here. It's indeed an honor and a privilege. I also want to be very respectful of time, and I wish the clock was there instead of there. Excuse the reading glasses, but I'm afraid I need them, and that also keeps my watch nearby. A disclaimer before I start, I have a habit, which I've had for about 63 years, of speaking rapidly. So if I'm going too fast, please slow me down. Okay? University has been a part of my life really as long as I can remember. I grew up on a small dairy farm in southwestern Minnesota, and in those days, 4-H was a really, really big deal in that part of the state. That was my first exposure to speaking in front of people, to running meetings, to expand my horizons beyond that dairy farm in Jackson County with activities at the local level, the county level, regional, and state. Also, that was my first exposure to the University of Minnesota, St. Paul campus. Great experience in terms of 4-H. Educationally, I've had fortunate to have a wide-ranging background in education in addition to the degree from the university, also another bachelor's and a couple of master's. The university is intertwined throughout my life. And you see this in a kind of a recurring theme, if you will. Just a quick aside in terms of education. I started out school in a one-room schoolhouse with 4 kids in my class, 12 in the entire school. And I've seen different numbers, but anywhere from 63,000 to 69,000 at the University of Minnesota. A bit of a difference, but it's interesting. Also, I remember it was a big deal in second grade, and I don't want to make this sound too rustic, but it was a big deal when we actually got indoor plumbing in that little one-room schoolhouse. It was a memorable moment.
Especially on a day like today.
On a day like that. It made the school day shorter. You're exactly right, Mr. Duncanson. In terms of career, started out, first job, and again, the university pops up because I was an extension educator, or agent, as we called them in those days, in Nicola County. Did that for several years. Many of the 4-H'ers I worked with are now highly valued bank customers. Also, one of the extension committee members was the owner and the president of a local bank who eventually hired me, and that's where I've been employed for the last 31 years. Again, the university tie. Minnesota is very fortunate to have an outstanding education system in terms of the university, the Minsky system, also the private school system. From a career standpoint, in addition to the university, I've been in the bank for over 31 years, worked for the Farm Credit System prior to that, had an opportunity to be involved in a number of relatively complex financial situations, also some very challenging emotional situations with the 80s of the farm crisis and so on. I don't mean to reiterate things that are already in a written application, so I'm going to gloss over some of this very quickly. If you have questions, I'll certainly refer to them at any time you ask. The bank is very strongly supported involvement in the community. I had an opportunity to be involved in a number of leadership roles, governance roles, that kind of thing. And, again, the bank was very supportive of that, and it's been a big part of my life. Again, with the university serving on the Extension Committee as chair of the Extension Committee, the Southern Research and Outreach Center, chair of that for 3 years, vice chair under Mr. Duncanson's brother for a couple of years prior to that. The school board in St. Peter was a great experience, and I recognize that's governance, but that's not the same as the regents. However, the university regents is really the ultimate school board, if you will, in terms of size, scope, that kind of thing. But the governance criteria, et cetera, are the same. University is wonderful. It's been great. It has a huge mandate. 400,000 plus alumni, $8.6 billion in terms of economic impact. But I have some concerns about it. There's some cracks in the armor, if you will. Those are some of the things I'd like to address. In doing research, I found numerous acronyms, and I decided to make my own. And what that is, and please excuse the reading glasses, but concerned about the diversity within the institution, the affordability of the institution, the infrastructure, the image, and this really bundles it all together, the finances. That was also addressed in my written application. If you put those together, you get DAIF, D-A-I-I-F. Diversity, affordability, infrastructure, image, and finances. I have several solutions is perhaps an optimistic term. I never like to present a problem without presenting also what I perceive to be a potential correction or at least something to alleviate the pressure in that problem. So I do have some responses relative to those things. Time in the opening statement does not permit me to go into that. I would very much appreciate the opportunity to discuss those with you in the question and answer session if that's appropriate for you. With that, my 5 minutes in the opening statement are probably just about up, and I do not want to exceed that, so I welcome any questions you might have regarding governance, regarding solutions, et cetera. Madam Chair.
Thank you. Pat, would you like to start?
I'm going to go right to the heart of what I believe maybe one of your strengths is, and that is your vision or your perspective on the university's role in outstate economic development and how that balances with an urban population that is also needing that same economic development.
Excellent question, Mr. Duncanson. I had some time, or a chance to visit with Dean Brian Brewer at CFANS, and he and I share a lot of concerns regarding that. We're losing, if you will, and that's probably too strong a term, but a number of highly qualified, capable rural students that would be wonderful university alumni in a few years and taxpayers in a few years after that, for various reasons, are choosing to go out of state. And some of that has to do with affordability, but a lot of it has to do with image and access. And Mr. Duncanson, to tie that in with the urban setting, I mentioned earlier my experience as a 4-H'er. That exposed me to the University of Minnesota. It's not an impersonal place. It's a very personal place. I had wonderful faculty. They were great, great relationships. People, and I've talked to a number of our customers that have juniors and seniors in high school and the students themselves, and many of them say, gosh, the university is okay, but it's so big, and it's so urban, and it's so hard to get to. And so I'm going to South Dakota State, or I'm going to River Falls. No disrespect to those institutions. They're fine. But we want them in Minnesota. We don't want to lose the best and the brightest. And it's the intimidation factor. We need to midterm, long-term, and also short-range strategies, which I can get into later. But one of those is the visibility to get students on campus, to make them know people on campus, get the campus folks out into the countryside. Minnesota has developed a program called Minnesota Pipeline, and that's tying students from greater Minnesota as well as urban areas to the opportunities within the university to make the students aware of that, catching them in their formative years, making their parents cognizant of what the university offers. Can I go one more step? I don't mean to go on forever here. The United States has been the envy of the world in terms of food and research and agriculture production. I know a lot of people. Every one of them eat, even if they live in a metro area, urban area, suburban area, whatever. Food is a tremendous resource. Our researchers are aging. Talking to Dean Burr, there's a potential we could lose close to half of our faculty at CFANS to retirement in the next 7 years. We're not producing new PhDs rapidly enough. And that's partly due to the economy, where the students with a bachelor's degree can go out and get a very high-paying job. But we need those researchers. We're educating a significant number of international researchers, but some of those go back home. And our competitors are Brazil, Argentina, China, India, and we need those folks here. That is a major concern of mine. Also, the university is the only, to my knowledge, institution in the Big Ten that offers bag degrees and graduate degrees within a heartbeat of a drive to how many Fortune 500 companies? Land O'Lakes, CHS, on and on and on, Cargill. You can't do that in Iowa City. You can't do that in Madison. Again, no disrespect to those communities. Northwestern does not offer an ag degree. Obviously, there are Fortune 500 companies in their backyard as well. So I have a significant concern about that. Mr. Duncanson, did that help at all? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Lois?
You accurately portrayed the the decision-making process vis-a-vis South Dakota State and being slightly north of you from my personal perspective, North Dakota State and UND, and then throwing in the Wisconsin schools. How, when you look at the economic development issue, do you see the potential, the existence and the potential for enhancement or change, the relationship between the NITSCU systems in Greater Minnesota from the university perspective?
Another excellent question. The I'll get the acronym wrong, but the program that was established, I believe, in 2002 regarding the transfer opportunities. If you take courses in 10 different areas, that can be transferred seamlessly to any of the MNSCU and also university. Very important program. We need to be student-centric, if you will. And students are different than they were in my day. For one thing, they drive to school instead of walking. No, I'm kidding. That's not quite true. Students don't have the institutional loyalty that they once did. And they're somewhat selective in terms of they'll take classes here, they'll go online there, and they'll commute somewhere else here. So in terms of the transferability and the student-centric, focusing on what the student needs, how that student is going to get their degree and make contributions is critical. The cooperation, the collaboration between the university, the MNSCU system, the seamless transfer, and the private schools as well, critically important. And I'm not sure if this is exactly your question, Ms. Josephson, but if I can expand just a bit further. One of the things that really concerns me, resources are always incredibly short, but they're, and classes are more expensive, and our student from Morris will probably attest to that, more expensive as you get upper quarter division classes. Lab classes in physics are a lot more costly, and chemistry and so on, for a senior than they are for a freshman. It makes no sense to have empty classrooms sitting there at the university level if there's a student at Minnesota University of Minnesota Mankato or St. Cloud State University that want to take that class. The technology is available. Let them take that class. Get some incremental revenue from that student. Fulfill their career opportunities to utilize that. Get them into the workforce. Not only does that generate revenue for the university, it gets that student through school, it also builds some institutional loyalty. So someday, when they're voting, or they're in the legislature, or whatever, they will recognize that the university helped me. I'm here to support it as well. Does that help at all?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Before the next question, I'd like to ask those of you that have cell phones to either put them on airplane mode or maybe move them away from the microphones, where the microphone system picks up the signal, and that's why we're getting some interference in the system. Thank you. Ardell?
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Mr. Russo. I'm on the Minnesota State Arts Board, and so I have a question related to that. There we get the fact, or at least we think it's the fact, the trend that the humanities are not seen as important and therefore are not required for all students, or if they are, they're more the appreciation kind of classes rather than those with rigor. With that, what role do you see the humanities playing in the education of all University of Minnesota students?
Very good question. The humanities are part of becoming a well-rounded person. And I'm sorry, wait. Okay. A well-rounded person. It's an important part of being a well-educated person. Analyzing things, interpreting things, appreciating your surroundings, all part of humanities. And the mission of the land-grant institution, as you probably are aware with the Morrow Act, spoke specifically to agriculture, sciences, engineering, military science. And also it did not exclude the arts and humanities, which means that that is a very important part of the institution intuitively. So I think that's very important. The workforce development is critical, and it gets tons of attention, and rightfully so, relative to STEM, the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. But people need to communicate, and it's very important to have arts and then a communication and appreciation of life kind of thing that humanities provide. So I think that's critical also in terms of a well-rounded education.
Some of us would think that word STEM should have an A in it, so it would be STEAM, arts.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And I don't disagree with that. And that also, if you use STEAM as, and this is a stretch, but if you use STEAM as a power generator, that indeed makes it even more of a powerhouse.
Very good. Thank you.
By the way, Madam Chair, I'm glad to hear that the feedback was not my hearing aid, my pacemaker, or any of those things I don't have.
A sense of humor is always an asset.
Senator Bonhoeff, did you have a question?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Rosso.
Close enough. That's
okay.
Fine.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's fine.
You started off by saying that you had specific things that you would recommend in order to address your DIF, whatever. So pick two or three of the very specific things that you think are most important. You piqued my curiosity. I'm interested in your solutions.
Okay, thank you. One of the things I'm concerned about is diversity. And diversity is wide-ranging. It's gender, it's geography, it's culture, it's a wide range of things. As a kid on a small dairy farm in southwestern Minnesota, I was diverse to a student in inner city Minneapolis. Case in point, one of our sons was playing football in our conference, South Central, and we were playing as a non-conference game, Minneapolis Roosevelt. And before the game, the students got together, the players, and had pizza in the cafeteria at Roosevelt. And one of the kids are all paired up, and one of the students came up to our son, Jeff, and said, "What's your neighborhood like?" "Well, St. Peter, it's pretty homogenous. You know, it's one neighborhood. Different feel, exactly, or totally." And, you know, so in terms of that student, their image of the university probably is somewhat frightening. Again, it's this large, faceless, roughly, 320 acres on the East Bank and 140 on the West Bank or whatever it is, and 500 and some in St. Paul. But it's massive, and it's frightening. So we need to build relationships in those communities. The enrollment of international students has gone up nicely. The enrollment of African Americans is pretty flat. Hispanics has gone up somewhat. And the Native American has gone up somewhat. But those communities, I think, feel disengaged or detached from the university. And we need to build relationships there with community leaders. And when I was on a school board in St. Peter and also served on the Park and Recreation Advisory Board for the city, we have a significant number of Somalians and also a fair amount of seasonal Latinos. And we tried to be inclusive and get those involved, those students involved in school activities, get the families involved in nutrition programs, to let them know what's out there. And that's all part of exposure, particularly through the Extension Service in nutrition and 4-H outreach into the schools, to make those people aware of opportunities that are available to them. And that's all affinity building and image enhancing. And I'm probably going on too long, Senator. May I respond?
That's fine. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. You asked for two. That's one.
Yep.
Want another one?
If you don't mind.
Well, I'm more than happy to.
Go right ahead.
Okay. If I'm not boring people to tears here, in terms of the my chain of thought process put together here, the test scores have improved drastically. The ACTs are going from, 23-something to 27-something, which means that's great, that's good. But there's some student service support out there that perhaps isn't needed quite as much for the traditional student that's getting a 31 on the ACT for somebody that's an English language learner that can utilize those kinds of skills. The China Center, and I don't know a lot about that, but they're a whole group of fairly wealthy Chinese that would be more than happy to send their students to the U.S. to be educated, and they'll also pay tuition, and that's revenue, and perhaps they'll go on and get a graduate degree, and perhaps we'll keep them here as an engineer or something of that nature instead of competing with them 30 years from now.
So, gotcha. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bert?
Madam Chair, Mr. Rosso, at the outset you addressed three issues, diversity, which you have addressed, affordability and infrastructure. Can you give us your executive summary of what you would do about affordability and infrastructure?
Executive summary, good point. That means I'm talking too long. I Infrastructure, that was part of what the legislature provided last year in terms of additional funding for that. We all know we need to replace our roofs, those kinds of things that add longevity to buildings. And that's critical. You can't have classes with if you don't have a facility where you can learn comfortably. Affordability, that has to do a lot with partnering. The university has done a significant amount of that, but there's room for lots more. In talking to Dean Burr, one of the things that they're exploring is called the Dairy Authority, and that's partnering with public-private 50-50, perhaps putting a state-of-the-art dairy facility at the University of St. Paul campus. Environmentally friendly, state-of-the-art in terms of recycling of nutrients and feedstuffs and that kind of thing, utilization of the dairy products that are produced. The legislature is a key role in this. The university has autonomy, but the legislature is a big part of it. University and the rest of the state has unlimited needs. The legislature has limited resources. But the funding of affordability in terms of if someone wants to be, a chemist, and we know there's a lot of opportunity in that field. The opportunity to go to internships with companies that are in the Twin City area to pay a significant amount of that student's tuition with the agreement that they'll work for them for an X number of years after they complete their education. That would help underserved populations. It would help undercapitalized students that perhaps don't have the resources to go otherwise. The affordability is eliminating some very quality students. Those the scholarships that need that's also the outreach part of the arm, if you will, for scholarships that again could be funded by industry, could be funded by the legislature, could be funded by alumni that choose to reinvest back into the institution.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jerry?
Mr. Russell. You mentioned several different programs, initiatives, and things that the university or that the board has been involved with. Mm-hmm. My question to you is, what would you bring? You know, what about you would make this Board of Regents even a better board?
Another very good question. Talked to Chairman Beeson for a moment outside, and he said you have very good questions, and he was right. You guys do. I like to think that my educational background and my experiential background and my passion bring a lot of things. I understand, and I don't pretend to understand the full university. I'm not sure anyone does. But I understand how the university works. I understand how important it is. I would bring energy. I would bring passion. I would bring a background of involvement. And I would bring a perspective that perhaps is somewhat unique to what some of the other regions have. I'm also a team player. I build consensus. I listen. I'm collegial, and I would work very diligently to make the board a better place, and I would commit unending energy to doing that. I'm a workaholic. One of the concerns I understand is time, if I have time to do this. And just as an aside, I have clarified with my boss, who is the bank president, who also owns a bank, and we have an understanding that time is not an issue. That would be made available. And so I want to clarify that. So I would bring energy, time, understanding, background, experience, and great affection for the institution.
Thank you. Thank you.
Jim?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Russell. Just a word of first of all advice. Sprinkled throughout your excellent resume and your presentation are glancing references to the agriculture background that you have, but I would suggest that you have a stronger background in the agriculture community and knowledge of it than shows up here and you're focusing on. And if you're recommended by this group and talk to the legislators, I would recommend you recommend that you highlight that, because I think it is the strength of your application. And that's an important thing to the University of Minnesota agriculture in general. But my question would be, you've indicated, like all the candidates, that you see nothing that would prevent you from serving your full term. But we value highly, the legislature values highly, the seniority and the experience of returning regents that have been elected and then are seeking a second term, because it takes a long time to know what you're doing on that board, as everyone tells us. you're really applying for, in that case, a commitment for a 12-year term, because if you're a successful regent, we would very much hope that you would be able to do so and continue that experience and expertise. Is that something, that's a long time. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you're willing to commit, not just the 6-year time frame, but 12 years of a long commitment?
If the RCAC in 6 years, first of all, if I'm successful now, and if the RCAC in 6 years is willing to pass me on again to the legislature and given their blessing, I would be delighted to do that. Absolutely.
Thank you. Margaret?
Madam Chair, Candidate Russo, you know I checked your references, and I check references very hard. I don't let anybody off very easily. And when they mentioned your strengths, they mentioned all the things that you said. And then I say to them, but what's the other side of the coin? And what they said, he's forceful. He hangs on to issues. He doesn't change his mind easily, but they always says that at the end, you work with the group. There's never any animosity. Let's turn the clock back. What one issue do you wish that you hadn't been so forceful, so outgoing, so demonstrative about an issue?
Can I get back to you tomorrow on that?
No.
Interesting question. I guess the best example I can come up with at the moment would be, as some of you may recall, St. Peter had a significant tornado in 1998 that was not a good event. And the school suffered, and I was on the school board at the time, somewhere around $77 million in damage, and we had to make a number of quick decisions. There was some emotion involved in those decisions. It was in March, and for contractors, et cetera, to get things ready to go, and we had to finish the school year. We had seniors that needed to graduate. So in retrospect, I probably would have changed some things on how we rebuilt the school during that time with a longer-range outlook and had been a little more we were, I think, too short-term focused, and that was probably – I was at fault for some of that because, hey, it's end of March and we have graduation scheduled and we have students that can't be walking the streets. If we'd had more time to analyze what we were doing, I think we would have done that differently, and I blame myself for some of that in terms of short-range decisions that had long-term, if not negative, at least not nearly as positive as it could have been consequences. Am I answering your question at all?
Yes. But give me one example of what that was. If that's the overarching, okay. And what would you have changed specifically related to that?
We would have updated the labs in the science rooms, and we would have made a much improved gymnasium, which is small, cramped, and outdated. And ironically, we're now looking at a bond issue of $58 million to build a new high school, and we had an opportunity to do a better job than we did in 1998.
Thank you. Lois?
Madam Chair, Mr. Russell, you have been excellent in highlighting areas for improvement within the university to take advantage of lots of societal circumstances. They're operational suggestions. In my view, they're valid. How, in your experience from a governance perspective, have you interfaced that quality operational mind that you have and insight that you have? You will be bringing unique and broad insight to this board. How have you interfaced that with a governance role that is not operational?
Thank you. Then that's a key point. We are indeed a governance policymaking, and that's one of the things that was reinforced to me numerous times, and I reinforced to others as a school board member, as a member of the Sioux Trails mental health clinic, and that kind of thing. We set policy. Our person that we hire is the president or in a school setting, of course, the superintendent. That's who we discuss those issues with. In a board meeting, it's important that we recognize our role. And if we're going to have strategies we can talk about in broad policy types of formats, but the brand of beakers that the chemistry department purchases is not our call, and that's obviously an exaggeration. But no, and I think it's important that there be some input from the board members, be that regents or whatever board it is, relative to strategies. But the implementing of those strategies and actual acceptance of those, depending on their scale, is an administrative issue, and we need to recognize that. And I'm not sure if Ms. Josephson, that answers your question.
Yeah, the beginning part of it where you said those ideas, operational ideas, come forth in conversation that's not direct board action, and then working with fellow board members to have strategies that can align for those things to go forward was, in essence, what I took from your statement.
And you said it so much better than I. Thank you.
Bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a three-part question for you, sir. The first is, I've often heard it said, the single most important thing a board can do is to select the CEO of the institution. So the first part is to comment on that, if you agree with it or disagree. Next, with respect to your board activity, clearly the board needs to support the leader of the institution and the administration of that institution, but they also need to hold them accountable. So if you could comment on how you balance supporting and holding accountable those involved in your board experience?
Another very good question. You're right. The CEO is the person who we hire and the person who reports to us. And in terms of evaluating that person, that's done regularly, obviously, depending on performance. You have key performance indicators. If the institution is meeting those indicators, that's part of the evaluation process. That individual is always accountable to the board. We must support that person, particularly publicly. You never criticize anybody at a board meeting in an inappropriate fashion. And the support of that person is essential, particularly publicly. Part of the evaluation process, though, of being a board member or a regent is to expect appropriate performance. And that person is supported. But if that performance is inadequate, obviously there's some remedial opportunities to deal with that. But then after the performance has to improve, I guess is what I'm saying. Now, does that all answer the first part of your question?
Yes.
Okay. And then I probably also addressed the second part of that to some extent, but I was visiting with, and I'm not 100% sure who it was, but it's somebody who had a significant role with a major board, and I would say it was, but I'd probably be wrong, and I don't want to do that. But they were simplifying, but they said, in a very simplistic sense, the role of the regents would be to meet and see if the president, things are going well, the president keeps his job, or if things aren't going well, you change presidents. So one question is the board and the institution doing what they are supposed to be doing, and is the CEO of that entity performing in the appropriate fashion? Now, that's obviously an oversimplification, but that's kind of what it boils down to. You support, you analyze, you scrutinize, you expect performance, and the performance that you expect is outlined so that CEO knows exactly what their expectations are with those key performance indicators, and move forward from there.
Thank you.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Russo. We've been through most of your five concerns, your Dave. I'd like to touch on the remaining two.
I apologize for that, by the way.
No, that's fine. I like acronyms. I'm in banking.
Prior Lake.
So thinking of image and finance, particularly around some of the stories that came out 2 years ago, and on the board, how would you, since those were key concerns of yours, what do you see as far as addressing them from a region standpoint?
Could you expand on that just a bit more, please, Senator?
Sure. The Wall Street Journal did an article that was critical of the university and its financial management of resources. It was a black eye as far as image, was a black eye as far as finance. Those were two of your concerns that you hadn't touched on.
Exactly. I think part of that has to do with the legislative issues last year, where the president committed to reducing administrative costs by $90 million over 5 years. I believe already $36 million have been reduced, so we're ahead of schedule on that. So that key performance indicator, we're ahead of schedule, and that's a good thing. I think there also has been some clarification relative to the what was called administrator and what was called instructor. And there was some confusion, I think, regarding that, and I think maybe a significant number, as I understand it, of the so-called administrators were actually having classroom contact with students and maybe rightfully should have been called educators as opposed to administrators. That's something that is an ongoing concern, and that tends to linger in people's minds, and we need to address that, and that's very important in terms of reducing administrative costs, reducing what doesn't appear to be. And I'm not trying to denigrate administrators because they play a role, but the true focus of the university's education and the research, teaching, and outreach component is what we need to focus on. And I think we're doing a very good job at that, with ways to go, but we're getting there. Does that answer your question, Senator?
A little bit. I'm more interested in you listed as a concern. And we've talked about some of the things that have been done. What would you like to see? What would you like to see going forward?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Good. We're not looking backwards here, are we? I'm sorry. Yeah. I think a continuing focus on as I mentioned earlier, if we can do more sharing of resources with other institutions to utilize our capacity to a fullest extent, and that also can be extended to administrative supervision. Now, there are probably all kinds of administrative, legislative, and the legal restrictions, and as a banker, you understand regulations and how that entails, but between sharing administrators within the greater educational system, if there could be a streamlining of that, it would certainly save cost and would probably unify the systems to the point where they understand each other better and work better together with similar types of issues. It would be an initial strategy, I guess, I would explore how attainable and realistic that is. I would need to know more about it to answer that better.
Thank
you. Paul Taylor?
You mentioned earlier the need to do a better job of outreach into greater Minnesota to attract students. Your home is 12 miles north of MSU Mankato, and it's much closer to Gustavus than 12 miles. So how – this is tactical rather than strategic. I apologize that. But how do you think it would be possible to do a better job of introducing the best and the brightest in the class of 2015 from St. Peter Public High School to the University of Minnesota?
Very interesting concept, and I thought about that a lot. The school counselors still play a major role in that. We need to get the university personnel into the classrooms. The exposure from an agricultural perspective, judging teams, FFA judging teams is a big, big factor. And I know from personal experience, a good friend of ours' family chose to send their kids to North Dakota State because they were recruited by the general livestock judging coach from Fargo in Minnesota. Wasn't there. You can't be everywhere, but the visibility is critical. Getting people on those campuses. Also, the best and the brightest student at St. Peter High School and the best and the brightest student at Minneapolis Southwest High School, if they don't come from a farm background, probably have no idea that they could have a tremendous career as a soil scientist. They may want to be aerospace scientists or something of that nature, which is great. But we need to make people aware of the opportunities, and again, I'm talking agriculture here, that they don't know about because there are not enough farm kids anymore to fill those roles, and we need more folks to get into that category. The other thing we can sell to folks is, look, this is a Big Ten university. It's a Big Ten experience, and get away from home. Enjoy the opportunities, the culture of the Twin Cities. You might even get to go to the Citrus Bowl next year, perhaps, you know, one notch up. Those kinds of opportunities that MSU does a nice job as a regional institution. I don't want to criticize that at all because it's a valid institution. Gustavus is wonderful. And one of our sons went there, who's now, as a disclaimer, by the way, the I do have a son in the university system who is in medical school, and I have strong regard for the health sciences. That's a high priority for me. So as a disclaimer, I want people to be aware of that. But the opportunity then also to matriculate not only from undergrad but straight into a graduate program at the university that you can't do at one of the private schools, and you have limited options to do at a mid-school institution.
Thank you.
Margaret, Paul, did you have a follow-up? Margaret, did you have a follow-up?
No.
Okay, thank you. Pat?
And we don't have much time, Ken, but you've got touch points at many different institutions. You and I share some time together supporting South Central College in Mankato, one of the Minsky schools, mm-hmm. University of St. Thomas, Augustana College in your background, as well as University of Minnesota, Gus Davis. How do they all fit together?
Eclectically. My background is in terms of education, eclectic, and I've always been interested in education. I've always been interested in science, and I've always been interested in agriculture. Out of high school, southwestern Minnesota, like I mentioned earlier, I had some exposure to university, but had an uncle that was a professor at Augustana at one time, and so I had familiarity with that. I attained my first degree there. I also was interested in my family's history of educators, and I was interested in teaching, and I eventually picked up a Master of Arts in teaching. And as a quick sideline, if you may, I'm not sure how closely you looked at my employment background. There's about a four-month gap or so in there. And when I left Extension, I was offered a position teaching at a community college technical school in Iowa. And so I did that for a short time. It was not a good fit. It was a difficult area. The first week we moved in, the apartment next to us was robbed. About 3 weeks later, the laundry room four doors down was robbed. My wife was scared to death. I had an opportunity to leave and join the farm credit system, which I did, and then worked there for several years, and then, as I mentioned, came back to the bank. But anyway, the education opportunity at Master of Arts in Teaching, I was interested in that. I always wanted to focus on something. And Extension was wonderful, but as an Extension person, at a county level, I was a generalist by definition, looking at rosebushes one day, taking kids to a judging contest the next, perhaps being in a bean field the next day, seeing if there was frost damage or not. And that was fun and good exposure, but I kind of wanted to specialize, and that's why I ended up going into banking with finance. And once I was employed by the bank, I had the ag background, I had education background, and the biology degree at Augustana, but I did not have the business background. So I went to school at night and Saturdays, and that's when I got the MBA out of St. Thomas. Would love to have done that out of the university. St. Thomas treated me great. It was a good program. But the university pretty much had a day program at that time, and I had this habit of eating and supporting a family that couldn't go to school full time. So that's so it all ties together in terms of and I like to think that's a strength, Mr. Duncan. So I don't know if it is or not, but I've had private school experience, Minsky experience, University of Minnesota experience, education in different realms, and gosh, I'm one person, and I like to see that tied together again with more collaboration, cooperation between systems. Gosh, we're all in it to create workforce improvement, benefit the economy, benefit the state, and we can't afford to be provincial.
Thank you. Well, we are down to the end of our time together, so I would like to invite you to make a brief closing statement.
I hope I didn't frighten anybody when I came in here with this reams of paper. But closing statement is indeed short. Once again, I'd very much like to thank you for the opportunity to be here. I'm excited about the potential to potentially be a regent. I recognize that there are a number of qualified candidates. I have no idea what your decision will be, but I thank you very much for your time. And believe me, I would greatly appreciate the opportunity to proceed in the process. My educational background, my work experience, my personal style in terms of building a collegial, focused, non-aggressive atmosphere in terms of board behavior, board atmosphere would be very strong. As I mentioned earlier, the time is not a problem. I'm not going to retire tomorrow, but I'm reaching a point in my career where you mentioned the 12 years, Mr. Thompson, that I don't know that I'll still be at the bank in 12 years. So at some point in time, I'm going to be slowing down and retiring. I think I understand university. I don't understand everything. I don't want to make that claim. I certainly have a understanding of the St. Paul campus and extension component. I understand how governance works. I understand the role of a regent. I have the work ethic, and I would prepare. I don't claim to be the smartest person in the world, and I'm probably maybe not even close to being anywhere near the smartest person in this room. I would guess I'm probably not. But one thing I will promise, nobody's going to outwork me. I will do my homework. I will be prepared. And I'll do the best that I can to serve as an effective regent. And I would follow the protocol relative to governance and ethics and everything in my ability to be a high-quality regent. I very much appreciate your time and your patience. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. And with that, no other questions, I'll turn it back to Madam Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate it.